The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks to Anthony Chibadiwe, who filled in for me on yesterday's show from our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. We're back live with you today from Ed Stone, another beautiful day on the UK campus for God's College. We're in, it's the summer session, so no classes going on right now, but of course, lots going on in God's work, wherever you happen to be around the world. We're anxiously eagerly preparing and anticipating the reception and exhibit coming up on June the 10th, and I'll have some news on that here in just a second. On today's show, we're going to also spend a little bit of time in Colossians chapter 2. My father has a fascinating section in America Under Attack. I forget which chapter it's in, but it's the section on will worship, which is taken out of Colossians chapter 2. And so we'll look at some news events and also some recent history with respect to the way the news media in the United States treated President Trump's predecessor, and then go through that chapter, at least some of it. And then if we have time later on in the show too, we'll talk about loyalty, the way that God sees it. You certainly see a kind of blind loyalty in politics. You know, whatever it is that your particular candidate says or does, you see a lot of people that get on board with it, no matter what the truth is. And so we'll look at this subject of loyalty if we have time later on in the show. If not, it'll the study can easily carry over into tomorrow's program as well. But first, the upcoming exhibit. We're coming up on the end of the month of May, so we're just less than 2 weeks away now from the grand opening of the seals of Isaiah the prophet and Hezekiah the king. That exhibit opening up June the 10th in Armstrong Auditorium. And yesterday, I tweeted this out. I think Brent Noctegal, also from Jerusalem, tweeted out the Jerusalem Post coverage that we got regarding the upcoming exhibit. Our PR firm, by the way, sent out a news release, or a press release, I guess, maybe Sunday night. And this is a PR team that we have working for us actually in Jerusalem. But soon after that went out, they were contacted right away by the Jerusalem Post, saying that they wanted to feature the story the next day. And so in yesterday's print edition, there was a feature on page 7 of the Jerusalem Post with the headline, and this headline was even better than the online version, but it says, "The clay seal of the prophet Isaiah to be unveiled at joint Jerusalem-Oklahoma event." We got Oklahoma into the title there at the Jerusalem Post. The title of the online version of the article says, "Clay Seal of Prophet Isaiah to be Unveiled at Joint Israel-U.S. Event." So as I say, it made page 7 of the print edition of the Jerusalem Post. And then I believe Brent was saying that the story was actually featured as the top story of the online version of the Jerusalem Post yesterday for about 2 hours. And then it remained on the main page for their website for most of the rest of the day. This would be yesterday. And really, if you look at the article, we'll go through a few of the details here in just a second, but they did a really good job. They were sticking to our press release for the most part. But just looking back over this, this whole year, the past 4 or 5 months, going back to the coins that were discovered there or that were publicized toward the end of our excavation, I believe in March, and then in February, when Dr. Mazar came out with the news about the Isaiah Bulla, That was on the front page of the Jerusalem Post. And so the Jerusalem Post really has been doing a great job of publicizing Dr. Mazar's findings and also publicizing our relationship with her. I think that's the thing that's most exciting about this article that appeared in the Post yesterday. But it says this: clay seals believed to have been used by the biblical prophet Isaiah and King Hezekiah are set to be unveiled at a June event, which will be simultaneously in Jerusalem and Oklahoma via a live stream. So that's talking about the reception on June 10th. And then it talks about the two seals and then about three dozen other pieces or artifacts that have been loaned to us by the Antiquities Authority there in Jerusalem. And the article says later, the connection between Oklahoma and the Antiquities Collection lies with the relationship between Hebrew University of Jerusalem's biblical archaeologist, Dr. Eilat Mazar, and the Armstrong International Cultural Foundation, whose main cultural center, the Armstrong Auditorium, is based in Edmond, Oklahoma. And of course, this is a relationship, as the article brings out, that goes all the way back to the late 1960s. It mentions Herbert W. Armstrong and, of course, his relationship with Dr. Benjamin Mazar, Eilat's grandfather, and those opening excavations following the Six-Day War there at the Temple Mount in 1968. It says later on in the article, today the foundation continues this effort by sending student volunteers from Herbert W. Armstrong College to assist Dr. Eilat Mazar in excavating Jerusalem's royal quarter, including the City of David and the elevated Ophel section at the foot of the Temple Mount. It then talks about the exhibit itself, titled Seals of Isaiah and King Hezekiah Discovered. It's going to be on display there from June 10th through to August 19th, unless we can somehow manage to get an extension. That's not in the article, that's me talking. But in any event, it goes through the summer, and it quotes our very own Brad McDonald in this piece as well, the exhibit's curator, who described this, well, the stars of the show being the two bulle, but then there's an extraordinary supporting cast as well. And then this quotes Mr. McDonald, I believe. In addition to the seals, the Oklahoma-based exhibit, no, this is actually the article, it will feature royal Judean clay vessels, weapons used during the siege of Lachish, a replica of the famous annals of Sennacherib prism, and various Assyrian inscriptions and replicas of the famous Assyrian wall reliefs. So, I mean, the theme of all of the artifacts and what will be on display at Armstrong Auditorium, it's that same time period with Isaiah and Hezekiah. So there's a beautiful, beautiful story to be told in this exhibit. And I think I can also let you know, Mr. McDonald, he left on Sunday for Edmond. I believe the artifacts were in transit on that same day, or if not Sunday, on Monday. So they're probably in Oklahoma as we speak and fast, and they're probably being put together pretty quickly, as they've got just a little over a week to get everything set up inside the auditorium, the grand lobby of the Armstrong Auditorium. Quoting Brad McDonald later in this piece, it says, We will use maps, illustrations, interactive aids, and storyboards to connect all of the artifacts and create what we believe will be a unique and moving experience. That's, again, quoting Brad McDonald. He went on to say how that this is a truly historic exhibition. And you really have never seen an exhibit like this, not with all these pieces. He went on to explain in the article that, I mean, you'd have to travel to London or Jerusalem or Istanbul or Chicago or really all four of those places to get what we're about to be able to see in Edmond, Oklahoma. It's pretty amazing. What an opportunity for God's work. What an open door. And how exciting to see it, this coverage, to see it trumpeted in Jerusalem, which is, of course, where we're having one of the receptions. Jerusalem and Edmond tied together via live stream. It says the launch of the exhibition will be hosted at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. And then just to conclude the article, again, this appeared in the Jerusalem Post yesterday. And it has a great conclusion here, just about the relationship that that we've had over the last 50 years. And this is something, by the way, that we're really going to be drawing attention to, even at the reception, with some slide presentations and some video, and of course the speaking that will go on there. My father will be speaking from Edmond. Dr. Mazar, of course, will be at the reception in Jerusalem. But both of them, no doubt, will be talking about this special relationship that we have had with the Mazar family over the past 50 years. It says here, over the last 50 years, the Armstrong International Cultural Foundation has supported groundbreaking archaeological digs in Jerusalem with the goal of bringing biblical history to life and connecting people to their roots, allowing the past to empower the future. That's quoting from Brad McDonald. It says, finally, quoting him again, it says, to celebrate these incredible finds and the equally incredible milestone in our partnership, we wanted to bridge the gap between our supporters in Oklahoma and our friends in Jerusalem with a joint exhibition and reception. Our hope is that this international event will set the stage for the next 50 years of friendship, collaboration, and thrilling archaeological finds. So it's been quite a year so far for the little state of Israel with the U.S. embassy move just a few weeks ago, and then now this getting some kind of publicity there in Jerusalem. We're hopeful that other papers will come along and pick up that press release from Sunday. The PR firm was they were hesitant to even have it come out this early the way they viewed it. We were kind of getting anxious, saying, well, it's just 2 weeks away. But they say, well, Israelis, they're going to probably, if they come or they get behind it or they get excited about it, it probably will be more at the last minute. So anyway, we settled on 2 weeks before the exhibit. And so it's great to see the Jerusalem Post pick it up right away. And we hope that that will be the first of several news sources to run with this story. It says, finally, at the end of the piece, at the end of the exhibition, the foundation will return the artifacts to the Antiquities Authority. And it says there's no set date for their display in Israel. And of course, we're not going to criticize the Antiquities Authority or the Israel Museum, because we're very grateful that they have put these out to us on loan. But at the same time, I think when you look at the way we've put it on display at Armstrong Auditorium, in some ways, I mean, it's featured more prominently with God's work and with the Armstrong International Cultural Foundation than even some of the museums in Jerusalem itself. So however long we have it, hopefully it'll be for even longer than this summer. But even if it isn't, when all of those artifacts return to Jerusalem, let's just hope that they at least are featured prominently in the Israel Museum. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. At one time, the kings of ancient Israel and Judah, during the period of the divided monarchy, were not known apart from the biblical record. Critics did not believe they existed. But the relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and personalities that were at one time known to us only from Scripture. The Hezekiah Bulla is the latest find among literally hundreds of archaeological discoveries that corroborates Bible history. To learn more about this God-inspired text, request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. All of our literature is offered free of charge, without cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free booklet, we would like for you to enroll in the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This three-year college course includes 36 lessons and examines not just the fundamental questions of religion, but the fundamental questions of life. Request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure.
Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
You may be frustrated sometimes with the pace of change. I'm frustrated too sometimes. But you know where I stand. You know what I believe. You know I tell the truth.
That's President Obama. That was back on the campaign trail in 2012 when he was running against Mitt Romney. And as he says there, you know I tell the truth. Which is probably the signal that you're waiting to hear, if in fact there has been a lot of deceit. He talked about the pace of change, and of course there were a lot of changes during his 8 years as president, a fundamental transformation. But as America Under Attack brings out, it was cloaked in a lot of deceit. I mean, and you saw it. If your eyes were open to the truth, if you were really paying attention, you saw it. Of course, his friends in the media weren't really looking. They weren't paying attention, not in that way. We'll come to the swooning here in just a second. But let me just carry on here with a couple more clips. Here is him talking about, he made a big point of this, I think, before both elections, going back to 2008 and then again in 2012, although it was really stressed and emphasized in 2008, the point of transparency. Here's clip two.
I'll make our government open and transparent.
We'll do it in a transparent way. I want transparency. I want accountability so that the American people can be involved in their own government. Let me say it as simply as I can. Transparency and the rule of law will be the touchstones of this presidency.
And, well, later on in his presidency, I forget when this was exactly, but he said that his was the most transparent administration in history, in the history of the United States of America. Now, we've got some, we're actually working on quite a few different shows, videos, and segments, because it's such a big story. But there's more coming up on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and also at the Trumpet.com website about some of this fairly recent history. The transparency or the lack thereof, targeting journalists, leakers. You see journalists, the way that they freak out today, you would assume that President Trump is showing up at their front doors and putting them in handcuffs. But when you look at the previous administration and the persecution of journalists and leakers, President Obama, we've made this point before, but President Obama was much worse. Now, again, President Trump's still fairly new. He's only been in there a little over a year. But the Obama administration came in there with promises of honesty and transparency and then immediately put a cloak over its actions. And the most recent, of course, is the revelations about all of the spying and such. We've got more coming down the line for this program on that as well. But to give you, again, just one example, we've played a montage similar to this before, how that the media just took these claims and ran with them. They trumpeted this message. Here is the president and his administrators talking about how they went on for 8 years and basically got through 8 years of the presidency without even one scandal. Here's clip four.
Look, I'm proud of the fact that with 2 weeks to go, we're probably the first administration in modern history that hasn't had a major scandal in the White House.
And the president has spoken at some length about how proud he is that there hasn't been a major personal scandal in his administration.
Do they feel responsibility because they're historic figures? Yes, they do. But I don't think that it has made them be different than who they are. The president prides himself on the fact that his administration hasn't had a scandal and that he hasn't done anything to embarrass himself.
I am extremely proud of the fact that over 8 years, we have not had the kinds of scandals that have plagued other administrations.
No scandals, no embarrassments, nothing like that. And the reason they were able to say that with a straight face is because the media just absolutely loved that administration. As my father brings out, in America Under Attack, they swooned. They swooned over it. He refers to that that exchange that Michael Hastings, the late Michael Hastings, had with Martin Bashir, I think it was, on CNN. The fact that the media just, you know, when President Obama showed up, I mean, this was the way the media reacted. Here's clip three.
That's the presence of Obama, even on the press corps, even on the people who follow him every day. When they're near him, they lose their mind sometimes. You know, they start behaving in ways that are juvenile and amateurish, and they swoon.
And of course, you don't.
Oh, I do. No, I did. Oh, I totally. Oh man, I first met President Obama in 2006 when he was a senator. He was visiting Baghdad. I was the correspondent there.
You mentioned that.
I mentioned that, yeah. And of course, I got to ask my question. So of course, I'd say, well, you know, Mr. President, this is the second time I met you. And did I ask the hardball question? Did I ask about drones? Did I ask about civil liberties? No, I did not. I guess I'm not at liberty to say what I asked about, but it was soft.
Typical. Thank you for the admission.
That's two reporters yucking it up over how easy they went on Barack Obama. There were others, we played these clips before. There were others that talked about how he was never really vetted. Some that said, you know, he sent a tingle up their leg. Just craziness. Worship. Will worship. They lose their minds. I mean, does that sound logical and rational to you? When they're near him, they lose their minds sometimes. They start behaving like little children, like little amateurs. Well, but what about you? Oh, I was the same way. I'll be honest. I'll admit it. That was the press from 2008 to 2016, and they're still that way. Even with all of these revelations about spies and wiretaps, even with these revelations, there is, you'll notice, never, is Barack Obama held to account. It hardly happens in the conservative media either. Because they can focus their aim on, you know, James Clapper or James Comey or whoever. But who was the president? My father said in America Under Attack, this is the type of influence we see holding a grip on many people today. This hypnotic influence cannot be explained reasonably. You just can't explain it. Unless you understand that there is a real spirit world. Unless you understand that Satan is the god of this world and that Satan was behind the lies and the deceit. In the booklet, you can start turning over to Colossians 2 if you like, if you want to read along with me. We'll start in verse 18 here in just a second. But my father quotes Glenn Beck, the radio host, in the booklet about some of the lies of the Obama administration. And Beck is quoted as saying a few years ago, this is more a judgment on America and the press. I've never looked back and marveled at how many people will fall for and accept, knowingly accept, a falsehood. I've never seen it before in my life. He's never seen it before in his life. Anything like this. You just can't explain it, like my father said, unless you go to the Bible and you understand that the devil has been cast down and that his influence is stronger than ever. It's all in Revelation 12. How do you explain this hypnotic influence? Here's Colossians 2 in verse 18. It says, let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels. Intruding into those things, worshiping of demons, that is, intruding into those things which he has seen, it should read, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. They come forward, they volunteer their humility, they delight in humility. But it's not true godly humility. Satan, remember, like 2 Corinthians 11 says, he comes as an angel of light. I mean, smooth words. It sounds so good. I just read the other day about Neville Chamberlain. It reminded me of some of the statements that you heard a few years back. He said, I think this was on March the 10th, 1939. And Hitler, in the lead up to that, I mean, the Rhineland episode was in 1936, I think it was. And then Hitler devoured Austria in 1937. And then Chamberlain had a hand in dismembering Czechoslovakia, giving the Sudetenland to Germany. And so then, in his mind, Chamberlain's, everything settled. And I think he said on March 10th, 1939, that Europe had pretty much settled down and settled into a state of tranquility. Europe was tranquil. And 5 days later, the statement didn't even hold for a week. 5 days later, the Nazi machine devoured what was left of Czechoslovakia. Hitler marched on Prague. But see, smooth-sounding words, I mean, Chamberlain came through the end of 1938 as the most popular man in Britain. They were cheering him on because he said peace in our time. God says, don't let a man come along delighting in his humility, insisting on self-abasement, as the RSV says. Don't let someone like that fool you. Barnes' commentary says, the meaning is that they would not announce their opinions with dogmatic certainty, but they would put on the appearance of great modesty. Yeah, this is historic. No scandals, no embarrassments, no real mistakes, total honesty, completely transparent. And people who weren't paying attention say, well, I guess so. I guess that's right. Because they swooned. They lost their minds. Barnes goes on and says, in this way, they would become really more dangerous, for no false teachers are so dangerous as those who assume the aspect of great humility and who manifest great reverence for divine things. That's why, you see, that's why you have to carefully measure everything that they say and do alongside absolute truth. In this case, the Word of God, the Holy Bible. You can't just take what some man says. Furthermore, look at what the prophecies bring out. Isaiah 30, 2 Timothy 4. Paul told Timothy before he was about ready to have his head cut off. And he said, look, you make sure you preach the word. In season, out of season, whatever it is. I mean, you've got to speak the truth. You can't just swing wildly from one extreme to the other. Because during this period, you've got someone you absolutely love in office. And then now that you don't, well, it's exactly the opposite message. Preach the word, Paul said to Timothy. Be instant. Be quick to return to God's truth. It's a great section, those few verses at the start of 2 Timothy 4. But staying here in Colossians, look at verse 19. It says, and not holding the head, from which all the body, by joints and bands, having nourishment ministered and knit together, increases with the increase of God. I mean, here's where they ran into problems, that is. The Laodiceans, God's people. It's like my father said in America Under Attack, talking about all the lies and the deceit. I mean, have we been paying attention to this history? He said in AUA, we experienced that in our court case with the leaders of the Worldwide Church of God. Even our lawyers said they had never seen such skilled liars in their lives. I mean, they were really good at it. Skillful at lying. It was different than anything they had ever experienced. That's because nothing like this satanic attack had ever happened before. You see, Satan is cast down. Satan is cast down. His influence is stronger than ever before. So we better be holding on to the head. We better be looking to Jesus Christ as the head of the church. That's how the body receives nourishment. It comes from the top. That's why submission to authority, godly authority, is so important. I mean, that's where our loyalty is. That's where our allegiance is to God and Jesus Christ. If we hold to the head, that's the surefire way of remaining steadfast. That's the way to avoid just being tossed to and fro with every wind of doctrine. To and fro. You may have seen I didn't even bring this with me, but you may have seen the reports yesterday, all these radical leftists that grabbed hold of this picture of these little immigrant children locked in some kind of a fence, some kind of a cage, I guess. And they just erupted. This is going on in our country. This is happening in our country. Look at how evil President Trump is. Look at the problems that aren't being addressed or solved. That was the gist of their outrage. Until they realized that those photos were from 2014. They were 4 years ago. And then they started to remove the photos. All of a sudden they didn't care about the photos. All of a sudden they didn't care about the children. Because, well, that happened during the Obama administration. And if there's any criticism to go around, well, we certainly can't criticize him. We swoon over him. This world, I mean, truth is the casualty in all these wars that you see going on. You don't know where to get the truth. You don't know who you can trust. Well, you certainly know who you can't trust. Look at these people that are covering the news. Look at what they focus on. Look at what they don't focus on. Look at what they cover. Look at what they don't cover. Look at how they cover it. Look at the nonstop attacks. Or look at the nonstop justifications. You see it all over the place. Verse 20 says, "Wherefore, if you be dead with Christ from the rudiments of the world or the elements of the world, why, as though living in the world, are you subject to ordinances?" And then down in verse 23, we'll just hit a few high spots here. He says, "Which things have indeed a show of wisdom in will worship." Here's what my father focuses on that section in America Under Attack. It all has a show of wisdom, but it's just nothing more than will worship. It says, will worship and humility and neglecting of the body, not in any honor to the satisfying of the flesh. Let me just read that from the Revised Standard Version. It says, "These have indeed an appearance of wisdom in promoting rigor of devotion and self-abasement and severity to the body. But they are of no value in checking the indulgence of the flesh." See, there's no real doing of the law. It's not godly. It might seem like real humility. The smooth sounds, the smooth talking orator. It's all a show, though. That's what God says here. Wisdom and will worship, the better translation there, and my father brings this out in his writings, the Colossian booklet, to be precise, the forced worship of angels, fallen angels, that is, demons, will worship, the forced worship of demons. See, this goes right together with Revelation 12, Satan cast down. In the case of spiritual Israel, you had a lot of God's people who trusted more and more in human reasoning than they did in God. And of course, Satan capitalized on that. And forced them, really, to worship him instead of Christ. as my father brings out, in America Under Attack. I mean, we saw it happen in the Worldwide Church of God following the death of Herbert Armstrong. And you see a lot of it. That same spirit. It's all over the place. Satan's still cast down. And look at his fingerprints, if you'll just, as the booklet says, if you'll just open your eyes and pay attention. Now you compare all the swooning between 2008 and 2016. Compare the swooning with the way that they react to Donald Trump. I mean, they don't swoon in Donald Trump's presence. They loathe Donald Trump. They despise him. The president, that is, not the real estate tycoon or the television celebrity of just a few years ago. They loved him. They loved that. They loved the celebrity Donald Trump. They loved everything about him. The TV shows, the different marriages, the womanizing, all those things. That they loved. But this Donald Trump, President Trump, this one is revolting. This one they abhor. This one they loathe. Apoplectic, that's the only word that Richard and Sam and I could come up with. In opposition to swooning. That's the way that they react. Listen to this report. This is just from Sunday. Brian Stelter on CNN. This is the network that sort of sees itself or prides itself as the national news network. Here's a sampling, clip 5.
President Trump is the leader of the United States. He is also a liar. This has been well documented. Lying was a big part of his business strategy. He called it truthful hyperbole. Well, now, as commander-in-chief, he misleads the public constantly. I understand why many of you want news outlets to use the L word, lie, more often. You want us to affirm what we all see, that Trump has a truth problem. You want us to take us seriously, to take it really seriously, to recognize that it's damaging the country. And you want us to rethink how we do our jobs as a result. Maybe we shouldn't be reading his tweets aloud, because it's hard to believe anything he says. I agree.
He's kind of paraphrasing what some of the critics say, that it's hard to believe anything he says. And there's the CNN, I forget the name of his show, but he sort of monitors the media coverage. He agrees with all that flack, saying that they should bring up the L word more often. And that's all you're hearing on the news right now. They're gonna do it more often. They've got a lot more where that came from. And if this goes on for another 2-3 years, or maybe 6-7 years, some insight into the way that the coverage is going to be. Stelter's not alone. I mean, his colleague there at CNN, this is what Don Lemon said a few months ago on the same network, clip 6.
I don't want to sugarcoat this or talk about it because facts matter. And the fact is, I hate saying this, President Trump lies. He lies about little things like how big the crowd was for his inauguration or how many times he has been on the cover of Time magazine. He lies about big things like calling the Russia investigation a total fabrication. It's not. Or about who benefits from his tax plan. And every time we talk about this, the president's supporters insist that President Obama lied too. Well, here are the facts.
That's Don Lemon saying that, well, if you're going to say President Trump lied, then we'll at least acknowledge that President Obama did the same thing. That's the best argument that anyone can come up with, I suppose. And Don Lemon refutes that by referring to a study by the New York Times, of all places. The Times evidently applied the same standard to both and found out that Donald Trump is a super big liar and President Obama just a few fudges here and there, nothing more. The New York Times weighed in. This is the same newspaper that they did. I think the columnist wrote this yesterday or maybe Sunday, saying that it was now a settled fact that Donald Trump is a racist and a white supremacist. It's settled. This is factual. These are the facts. He writes in the New York Times, calls the president a weasel, He's a bigot. He's a racist. It's pretty amazing. I mean, this is the mainstream news outlet now. The New York Times. This is mainstream media. For this presidency, I played those clips last week, Chuck Schumer, saying this is a banana republic. We've got an autocrat. Nunez is crazy. I've talked to my colleagues privately, and they tell me, he says publicly, that Devin Nunez he's off his rocker. He's going crazy. He's a nut. This is what we can expect more of. More charges of lying and dishonesty. Switching over, I think this might have been MSNBC. Here's Carl Bernstein of Woodward and Bernstein fame from the 1970s, clip 7.
Bill, I think we can look at a big picture now with some real definition, in which the perilous moment for our country right now is a question of whether lies, authoritarianism, and the character of the President of the United States are going to take us to an authoritarian place where we have never been.
We've never been here. This is unprecedented. He's destroying the Constitution, say the swooners. Here's another example, Joan Walsh, clip 8.
You know, our parents raise us to say, be honest, and if you lie, people will then never trust you again. So Donald Trump has lost the presumption of truth. I rarely give him the benefit of the doubt if it looks like he's lying, because he has been lying his whole career. He's been lying his whole presidency. I don't think without evidence, he doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt.
And it's not just in the media, like I said, with the Chuck Schumer example. There are members of Congress, in the Senate, in the House, that are saying it's one lie, it's one falsehood. They sugarcoated a little bit, some of them. But how much longer before all of them are going to say, look, it's just nonstop lying? This is what Adam Schiff, he's on the same Intel committee with Devin Nunes. Only he's the Democrat. Here's what he had to say about the Trump administration and about Congress over the weekend as well. Clip 9.
Well, the broad question is, how do you counter a president who repeats falsehood after falsehood after falsehood, that has the bully pulpit of the presidency to do it, and has allies in Congress who are willing to support that? And Martha, at the end of the day, there's only one remedy for that, and that is you need to throw the bums out.
He's talking about his colleagues. Throw the bums out. Give us a majority so that we can impeach this president for all of the lies. Here's one of his colleagues in the House of Representatives, Eric Swalwell, clip 10.
And the American people are exasperated by the constant lies the president is willing to tell about basic accepted truths. I actually think, Erica, one day you're going to ask me to come on air and defend whether the sun really sets in the west, because the president woke up one day and tweeted that it's set in the east, and it's just absolutely maddening.
Well, it is maddening if you look at the back and forth, if you look at the constant flip-flops, if you look at the dishonesty on both sides. But there is a movement leading the way, cloaked in deceit, and that's exposed in America Under Attack, and it's being further exposed by the revelations regarding Spygate, as President Trump calls it. And if there's one thing that the devil hates, he hates exposure. He hates being exposed. This material, I don't have it here with me, this material we're working on for another segment down the road. I mean, you want to talk about persecution. You want to talk about a president clamping down on journalism, on free speech. Well, compare the two. And there's some honest journalists that say, look, we really took a step back during the Obama years. Freedom of speech, the free press, they took some massive steps backward during the Obama years, but you'd never hear that from the mainstream today. Because all that they're here to tell us is that the current president lies, and it's nonstop, and you can't believe anything that he says. His predecessor, you can believe everything he says. He tells the truth. He said so. I tell the truth. If there's one thing that you know about me, I tell the truth and I'm transparent. It shows what happens when you lose that spiritual underpinning, when you lose the authority of God's word, when people aren't held to account, when you don't have the same standard that applies to everyone, you get this. You get people arguing back and forth about, well, who's right? Who's got the truth? You can't trust anyone. The United States of America is more divided than it's ever been at any time since the Civil War. Honest commentators are coming forward to make that point, and it's true. And it's actually leading to a worse outcome than even that of the Civil War. Let me just conclude with, I mentioned that 2 Timothy passage. I see we're about out of time for another study anyway, so I'll save that material for tomorrow. And let me just take you through the last bit of 2 Timothy. It's one of my favorite books, if not the favorite. It's such a powerful, powerful conclusion to an incredible ministry and work that Paul did for God. After he was humbled, after he was struck down, and he looked to God for the truth. I mean, before his conversion, Paul was so sure he was right. He was so sure that he had the truth. He knew who needed to be persecuted. He knew who needed to be hunted down. He knew it was for the greater good. He was on his way to Damascus to help the religion of the Pharisees, to persecute true Christians. And then on his way, I mean, he was struck down, and he became one of the hunted, one of the hated. And from that point forward, I mean, he devoted his life to the spread of God's truth, to feeding the people of God, to proclaiming God's truth. He says to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3, we'll just pick up the last bit of chapter 3 first here. It says in verse 15, "And that from a child you have known the holy scriptures, which are able to make you wise unto salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." You've known these scriptures, Timothy. You've known them from your youth on up. He had a faithful grandmother and a mother, a God-fearing mother. And they had him grounded in the Old Testament scriptures. Now, he needed the power of God. He needed the mind of God in addition to that teaching. But this was valuable training that he got from his mother and grandmother. Paul says, "All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness." We've got to use it in the way God intended for it to be used, to be reproved, to be corrected, to be made perfect, as verse 17 brings out. Reproof, it means to tell a fault or to rebuke. We have to study the Bible for correction. We have to study the Bible to amend our ways, to get in step with God, to align our thinking with God's way of thinking, so that we can know the truth. "You shall know the truth," Jesus said, "and the truth shall set you free." And then you just continue on into chapter 4. No, there's no chapter break in the Greek transcript. He says further, Timothy's an older man now. He was brought up in this truth from the days of his youth on up. Anointed of God, Paul had laid hands on him, bringing him into the ministry. And he says here at the end of his life, Paul's life, he says to Timothy, "I charge you," verse 1, "I charge you therefore before God and the eternal Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing in his kingdom." He says in verse 2, "Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine." See, rely on that body of beliefs that you've been given, that God's opened your mind to. Preach it. It says in verse 3, for the time will come, and we're in this time right now. He says, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. See, the time will come when they just simply will not accept the truth. They won't endure it. They won't accept the truth. There's a case right here in the UK right now. It's astonishing, really. We discussed it just briefly in our meeting this morning. An outspoken critic who, and from what we can tell, he seems like he's itching for a fight with the government. But the way that the government cracked down on him and then put this gag order out on the press, and you had members of the press here in the UK that were pulling stories down over the weekend because they just couldn't talk about it. Now, again, I don't know how much there is to that story, but it's just shocking to be in the United Kingdom of all places. And it can't even be discussed. Case closed. Don't talk about it. Verse 4, it says, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. What happens, you see, when you've got every man doing what seems right in his own eyes? When you're relying strictly on human reasoning and everyone's got a different take? It's a dangerous time. They'll turn away their ears from the truth, it says, and shall be turned to fables. Look at how people just are willing to swallow even the biggest of lies. I mean, Adolf Hitler said, I mean, the bigger the lie, the better. Just keep saying it over and over again. And they keep trying to negotiate with them, and he'd sit down with them across the table. And as Manchester brings out in his book about Churchill, Hitler was no negotiator. He despised negotiations. He would sit across the table from a diplomat and just absolutely loathe that individual for being so weak. And yet he'd tell them a lie. And so many of them just, they want it so bad for it to be the truth. They couldn't understand that there were some people in this world that just simply wanted to fight. They want war. And that's something the mind of an appeaser cannot grasp. Lies and lies. And who is the father of lies? To come back to America Under Attack. John 8. Read through it. There's a lot in there about truth and lies. It's Satan. Satan is the father of lies, as America Under Attack brings out, as it says there in John 8, Revelation 12. Just to close the loop here on 2 Timothy 4, it says, finally, but watch you in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist. Make full proof of your ministry, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. He was about to die. And he says to Timothy, look, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, preach the word, be instant, in season, out of season. And know this, there's a time coming, when they just won't endure the truth. They won't endure sound doctrine. They'll turn their ears away from the truth. That time is here. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you join us tomorrow on the show, and we'll get into that subject of loyalty. Loyalty to God, first and foremost. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.